I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You are listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. As always, I have my two guys here with me, Mr. Matt Welty.
It's a lovely Tuesday.
And, of course, Mr. Brendan Dunn. How's it going, buddy?
I'm here. It's really nice out. I kind of, no offense to my friends, but I wish I wasn't here. I wouldn't mind if we were shooting this outside. Let me put it that way.
It's beautiful out, and I think it's going to get tougher for us to be inside shooting this midday, especially when the temperature in New York City is rising and normalcy is creeping back in.
I saw a meme that was like, when it goes above 60, and it was like everyone in New Jersey, and it was Paulie Walnuts holding out the reflective thing going tanning.
It's very funny because I essentially reenacted that Paulie Walnuts scene yesterday at a coffee shop in Long Island, and I forgot who I was FaceTiming, and I FaceTimed someone. They picked up, and I was just literally just holding the menu like this, like Paulie Walnuts. So it is New Jersey and maybe Long Island a little bit too.
Man, normalcy sounds nice. Did we already talk about our vaccination situation? How deep are you guys into that right now?
Haven't even looked it up yet.
We're progressing. I'll leave it at that. Okay. I mean, you seem comfortable talking about it. And okay, because you keep
just
bringing
happy
it up.
That I have one of them. Do I keep bringing it up? My apologies.
A little bit. No, apologies. You're allowed. And you had a little soreness, but you overcame. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm feeling okay. And then I have the next one in a couple. I know it's like the cliche thing to talk about right now, and everybody just asks people for small talk with what's going on with their vaccine. But
do you guys remember when you had to get like the tetanus shot as a kid?
I don't remember that.
You know what I realized? Actually, okay, disclaimer, my mother is not an anti-vaxxer. Let me just say that before we get into this. But I realized that I didn't get a lot of the shots that you were supposed to get when I was a kid. I remember changing schools and things like that, or going on to the next school, and I remember there always being a little snafu at the start of the year with the principal's office or something, being like, why doesn't this kid have his shots or something? So I feel like I was missing
Brendan
some
was like
crucial shots.
One of those wild kids living out in the woods in Idaho getting raised by wolves.
Kind of, yeah. But again, not because my mom was an anti-vaxxer. Let me just put that out there.
All right. I just remember it felt like someone like punched you in the arm like really, really hard for like 3 days, and that was the worst.
Yeah.
And you're feeling good.
Yeah, feeling relatively good.
Do you know what else we feel really good about, Brendan?
What?
The fact we bought structured triaxes this morning.
Yes.
What was that all about? I saw that in the Slack. What were you guys talking about? Riley Jones is great.
He'll just pop up and boom, he's got the link for you. So I've been anticipating the Structure Triax Retro for forever. Welty, I'm sure you feel similarly, even though I know you didn't really have designs on buying it. But we were just casually talking about it this morning. Riley Jones, of Soul Collector / Complex Sneakers fame, a crucial member of the team, pops out with the link. And we hopped on it right away, and we bought them from Hibbett Sports.
The issue was that I had the shoe back in 2008.
Right, the only time it's retroed before.
The only time it's retroed, and I got it in a size 12. I wear 11, maybe sometimes 11 and a half. Mm-hmm. And as I
told you... How did you have the 12s?
My friend bought them for me. My friend Dave at the time was like, hey, it's the last size left at a store. Do you want them? I was like, you know what? Screw it. Like, yep. I know I'm... And this was pre-StockX and everything, so it's like I'm not going to be able to track it down that easy. And as you guys know, and as I showed everyone on social media, my right foot is fairly small. that I kind of got roasted for, but going up the extra size made it even worse, and I had to stuff the right shoe with like...
This three is on your triaxes, not the closet.
On my triaxes, with like 3 inches of toilet paper to like make up for the difference. in the sneaker. So I'm glad to finally have the shoe.
In your size.
In my size, because I had it for all these years, and like every time I wore it, I felt like...
I think this new retro is supposed to be considerably better than the last one. I never owned the last one, so the shoe's from 91. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I think it came back out in 2008, and now it's back out in 2021, which we're happy about. But from what I understand, the 2008 pair is a little iffy, right? Paint chipping, toes crinkling up.
I think all the shoes from that era like weren't that great.
That's great, and I'm glad that you guys got them. We all know Riley Jones' best assist ever. Do we want to say it in unison, though?
I know.
Well, he knows
the purple 992.
The purple New Balance. Yeah, yeah. The purple New Balance 992. And that is a good segue because we got some sneaker news. And I've been waiting. I haven't heard much from our New Balance correspondent about this. But Sunday, Easter Sunday, it gets announced. Teddy Santis is now the creative director of Made in the USA New Balance. How we feeling? Congrats to Teddy. I told you guys every time I was, and I don't go there that much, especially because of the pandemic, but every time I went to Ame and on Mulberry, he would be on the phone and I would be like, oh, who are you talking to? And like so many times it was like, oh, it's just like Joe from New Balance. So big, big creative director role at New Balance, Made in USA starting 2022. How do we feel about that move?
I think it's just a need to wait and see sort of situation, you know? I think that there's obviously things that he's going to do that are going to be interesting and good for the brand. And obviously having someone around that lends the sort of expertise of like what's cool and what's not cool, I think is always a good thing. And Teddy, at least recently, has a good track record of kind of like appreciating the classics across the board and like not really playing into hype, which I think is nice. And I guess the only like skepticism I have in my mind is that like what's made New Balance great for so long is that they haven't really like wavered with trends. They've just kind of like been the company, you know, notoriously up until I think the early the 2010s, the motto of the brand was endorsed by no one. So to bring in a big name, I guess like some of the hardcore New Balance people are like, might feel a little skeptical about it, because Made in USA just isn't hype collaborations. It's a bigger umbrella that, you know, involves like walking shoes and all that. So I don't know how that role is going to affect that portion of the company at large. Because when I think of Made in USA New Balance, I don't think of hype sneakers.
You think of 990s and just...
Generic good shoes gray that like suede. People like to wear. So I don't know how much of a budge...
Honest, some of his past collabs, because of Ame, it's going to be hyped, but the models weren't flashy.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Like the 550 so wasn't anything until...
That's what I mean. Like if it was, you know, if it was these sprinkle-colored kind of makeups and they were more, but Teddy's aesthetic seems like it wasn't really made for hype. It just, we always talk about it. You go into the city, it's the first shoe you see. Like I even hit you guys up like 2 weeks ago. I went for breakfast and it was the 550s in like downtown New York. You see it all over the place. But really excited about it. And we'll see. And starting in 2022, interested to see.
I'm just so happy to hear those insights from Welty in terms of the hardcore New Balance enthusiast, because I feel like this is the type of move, and this is no disrespect to Teddy or his body of work, but this is the type of move that the people who have been rocking with the brand for 15, 20 years, 25 years might be upset about. And I know Welty's in those kind of group chats, so I know he's seen some of those responses.
I'm not like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not angry about it. It's just, I think sometimes there's like you said, like people have been rocking with it for so long. And then there's some people who feel like, we know people who have been on this for 20 years. And then someone has been on it for 2 years, but then they get gifted the keys to the car. So
were you up for the position?
No, I'm not.
Did you submit your resume?
Well, let me say,
I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of those people. There are who view it in that extent. Like, who are you to become like the ringleader of this ship?
Right.
That's all.
Okay.
I do think that's a skewed view, but that's a deeper conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
And what else? I wore those Tune Max all weekend long, and I cannot co-sign enough. They were, yeah, just I such a
comfortable,
such a great shoe, super comfortable, all black. I think we talked about your all Nike black fit. I think it'd be a good look for you. I'm not pushing a pair of sneakers on you, but the Toon Max passed the whole Easter weekend test. So
now let me ask, maybe you don't really know, but were those hard to get? I mean, I couldn't tell if that was a shoe that people were going to be going crazy for. I feel like every shoe sells out right now, but was that shoe difficult?
I got them a little early and a little over retail.
Okay.
Sometimes you don't know how to – I can't tell. Yeah. So if it's
you
in
you
that
– You don't know if you have to cash in a favor or
it's
not.
And it's actually a good strategy. I don't know if you guys agree. If it's like $50 more than the retail price, I get them early. And then if it's easy to get, then okay, that's great. And if not, I went up $50. But I got them a little early, so –
I think it's one of those shoes too that like you said, it's hard to gauge because there may be like an early like Nike's like sneaker release or like a UK release on the shoe and it sells out the first drop and everyone's like, oh shit, I can't get it, you know? But then when all these other retailers continuously drop it, it's not going to be as hard because once people see that there's only like a $20 margin on the resale, people aren't going to go all out, you know, to try and get them.
The other thing is you get DMs when you post them. What are these by, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
Always a good feeling.
Yeah. Some just not aware of like the history, but.
You know what, Welty, that math around trying to figure out whether or not you have to buy them right away is some of the same math we were talking about the Tri-X, where we weren't sure if people really cared about the Structure Tri-X Retro, and we were thinking on the Soul Collector team, can we wait a little bit? Can we wait till these things go on sale like some of the Air Max Retros in the past couple of years? You can't do that nearly as much as you used to be able to, but I was even a little hesitant when we purchased our pairs because I was like, man, I feel like I could scoop these with a 20% off somewhere. But
well, I think too that with that sort of stuff, it's like, people think that they're not able to get anything on sneakers. So when anything pops up on sneakers, people are like, oh, let me just try at it.
Of course.
You know, or not to do a pun, but.
You said try at it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but they just try. And I feel like maybe it's in smaller numbers, but a good portion of the people who ended up getting those in the first place were like, yes, I finally won on sneakers. And then they realize what they won and they're like, oh, man, why did I get this shoe?
Speaking of winning, did you guys watch the NCAA championship game last night?
Gonzaga got the big L.
I watched two games yesterday, as you guys know, well documented in the Slack. I'm a diehard Mets fan. Ben Felderstein disagrees.
Of course.
In kind of an inside joke, but I did watch the Met game, and then I was we were going at another colleague, Mike DiStefano, and he's a Phillies fan, and the Mets were winning 2-0, and then of course the bullpen blew the game. And the Mets lost. And then I turned on the national championship game, and I was like, I'm going to have a really big Monday night sports night. And it was a blowout. So
not particularly interesting.
Yeah, not interesting. Not interesting. But
you know what? I was really upset, too, because obviously I'm rooting for the Oregon Ducks. Or I hope it's obvious at this point. But I think I said on here as well that Gonzaga was a big deal when I was growing up, where I was growing up. So I was ready for Gonzaga to win because I wanted to let all my deep cut Spokane, Washington tweets fly. And I still got a couple of them out there. But Spokane, Washington is a terrible place. No disrespect to anybody who lives there, but I've spent time there and I know, so don't disagree with me. But for that reason, and you know, thinking back to Adam Morrison collapsing on the court and things like that, I wanted to see Gonzaga win. Or at least have it be a game.
Yeah, I remember Gonzaga. It always felt like they were always the Cinderella team, or this was the year. This was the year. But them being undefeated, you thought that maybe this was really the year. And Baylor just poured it on. And then when Gonzaga was like shortening the gap and
chipping away at it,
chipping away at the score, they just had to answer every time. So
I'm chipping away, man. I'm still chipping away at the gigantic hole that I put myself in when I bet against Gonzaga at the start of this tournament. I'm selling Roshi runs. Somebody bought a pair of Roshi runs for me on resale the other day. Who in 2021?
Which colorway was it?
Squadron Brandon? Blue Roshi runs for retail. I felt like I hit the lottery, man.
The shoe that, yeah, that shoe that had a crazy moment. And now looking back, people hate on it. But man, did that have a moment.
It's probably like someone, Brendan, who bought that shoe like 4 or 5 years ago. And that was, and it's like some mom that's like, oh, these are my favorite sneakers. You know, I need another pair of these. I won't wear any other shoe. I love
not
my Roshis.
Not a sneakerhead person at all. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and they finally found them for sale and they lucked upon your StockX thing. The weird sneaker rabbit hole that I went down, and I think I've told you guys over the past week, is like there's multiple YouTube channels where it's like behind the scenes at sneaker resale shops.
Yeah,
and it's like,
been sharing like vlogs. Vlogs?
Kind of. It's like there's multiple channels that they do it where they set up like a camera on the counter of yeah. like these buy and sell resale shops, and like it's the customers coming in with like 6 pairs of shoes, and like they're trying to make a deal with like the shop owner,
like Pawn Stars.
Kind of, yeah. Like, okay. but sneaker resale.
Got
and
it.
Obviously, these stores are, well, not obviously, but these stores are trying to buy the shoes and then sell them instead of consign them.
Right.
So, like, the margins are, like, way off on, like, what you would think you would get the shoe for. So,
gotcha.
Say
it's more so, like going into GameStop than it is going into Flight Club.
Yeah. So, instead of thinking this shoe sold on StockX for $400. I'm going to get $400 for it. They're like, no, we'll give you $280 for it, but we'll give you cash.
Yeah,
right
cash
now,
right there, just like or, round two would do.
Yeah, but they're like taking like 7 pairs of sneakers and like trying to like bundle them up and be like, I want a pair of like Union Ones or something like that. And
so
like,
can they get store credit when they trade this stuff in? Is that how it works too?
I think one of the shops like gave them store credit, but like they'll give you more in store credit
of course,
than they'll
of
give
course.
Than they'll give you in you know actual. Cash. Cash, but just to see these kids like take 6 pairs of shoes to get one of their grails is just like such a crazy concept of like trading all your sneakers for like 3 sneakers. But
hey man, I'm trading all my sneakers away for nothing basically right now, like I said, trying to repay this gambling debt. It'd be nice to get a pair of Jordan ones out of it.
Joe, speaking of trying to win things, don't you have a some sort of massive giveaway?
Oh yeah, I mentioned that last week, the Omaze giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Off-White Chicago 1. Still, you could still enter at www.omaze.com/JLP. Thank you for plugging that, Welty. Still going on, and it's for a great cause. It benefits It's From the Soul. Great organization, It's From the Soul, and good charity. And yeah, we're working with Omaze, and so I'm really excited about it.
Love that. We got to get another plug out of the way, too, just while we're in the zone. Okay. If you're listening and you haven't subscribed or you haven't commented or you haven't rated, please do us that small favor because it really does help and it really does grow us as a podcast. So hit the subscribe button, leave a positive comment about how much you appreciate what we're doing and leave a rating, a 5-star rating.
Yeah,
it's not a big ask.
Yes. And you guys shot the week this week, Joel Santana.
Yes.
That episode will be out when this episode is out. How was that?
I love that. It was amazing. I mean, like, it's one of those ones where you just wish you were in the studio for it. But
yeah,
even still, it was a great conversation. And I think there's a lot of really important moments. Oh, I mean, we got Joel Santana talking about ironing his bandanas. Like, that alone
amazing.
Is worth the price of admission to me. Even if we just had that tidbit, it'd be a good episode, but we got so much more.
Big Dipset content week, because if you were like me and my co-host Brendan Dunn, you
yes.
sat 3.5 hours and watched Cameron on Drink Champs. What an interview.
Saturday.
What an interview.
I can't remember.
Wow. If you haven't seen that, shouts to Nori. Go watch that. What an interview. Great stories. Big Dipset content week. Full size run, Joel Santana and Cameron on Drink Champs. So
now all we need to do is get Cameron on Full Size Run. What do you think, Welty?
You guys need that.
Joe, what are you drinking on? I keep seeing you sip from this bottle.
Manhattan Special. You guys know about Manhattan Specials?
I don't.
It's coffee, right?
It's like an Italian specialty premium coffee soda. It's like it's like an espresso. If you need a afternoon pick-me-up, it's great for that.
Hold on. That sounds too much like an ad read. We don't want to go that
no,
far with
it's
the endorsement,
not.
Do we?
No, this is iconic. You trust me.
Okay.
Yes, we do want to go that far.
Okay. Take it even further.
If you know, this is okay. An iconic drink. Yeah.
I was jealous. I thought it was a root beer.
It's really good. You would love it. Well, do you ever have one?
No, but I remember it from, I think we mentioned it on here, when you did that whole My Spot plug on complex.com back in the day, which was kind of like a
Brancaccio's food shop. Yeah,
of course, of course. An iconic editorial. I remember that.
Yeah, and I was like, this is where I go for my Manhattan special, but that was my old neighborhood. But shouts to them, and
still haven't changed your ways.
To be honest, a Manhattan special get together for when we're all together would be a nice little get together. Manhattan specials. Anyone who tries it really loves it.
As the kids would say, does it hit different?
It does. It does.
Can I have a root beer?
It does. It does.
When we do the meetup, can I sub it in for a root beer?
No. No, you can't. This is you're gonna
love
this.
You're never drinking coffee, right?
I've never had coffee.
It doesn't taste like coffee. It tastes okay. I would willing to say it almost tastes closer to like a root beer than a coffee.
But I can't just have a root beer?
No, I want you to drink. You could have whatever you want, but I would like you to try this as a friend. I think that you would enjoy this. Okay. And I think if we phoned a friend, Premium Pete, he would also co-sign it. It's a great drink, trust me.
Okay. I'm on board.
All right, guys, let's get to this week's guest.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Our guest on today's podcast is one of the most prominent people in the custom design sneaker space. Since he was 18 years old, he has constructed and deconstructed some of your favorite silhouettes and made them his own for a stacked celebrity clientele. He first started remixing sneakers for his friends in high school, but it was a trip to New York City and an inspiring run-in with Pharrell Williams, where the shoe surgeon was born. Since then, he's gone on to create footwear for the likes of Justin Bieber, Odell Beckham Jr., Drake, LeBron James, and more. And besides the splashy roster of celebs that wear his sneakers, he also has consistent drops where he takes your favorite models like the Jordan 1, Jordan 4, and the Griffey 1, floods them with luxury materials and textures, and watches them sell out on his website. More recently, he has been spreading his talents to the aspiring designers through his shoe school, a 3 to 5 day crash course on everything from sewing and patterning, footwear, to lasting and sole removal. We're excited to have our friend, Dominic Chambroni, the shoe surgeon, on today's podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, man. I love the introduction. Appreciate it.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Well, we're glad to have you. I know that you were on these guys' show over what? It was like a year ago. It was quarantine, right?
Yeah.
I think I was the first digital one.
Yeah. I can't believe it was that long ago. It really felt like the summer, but yeah, I was looking at my notes this morning and it was just over a year ago.
Wow. And here we are now.
That's crazy. So.
Still remote.
Yes. You know, what's funny is recently I was out in Charlotte because I have family out there, and I was sitting down with my homie Josh, who owns Black Sheep, and he was like, "Yo, did you hear the podcast with Middleton? What's his first name?
Paul Middleman.
Yeah.
Middleman. And I was like, "No," I was like, "I mean, I'm so wrapped up in my own world that I don't really listen to anything." And then next thing you know, I'm listening to that one, and I listen to Jerry's, and then I'm like, "Oh shit, this is really good. This is good information." So it's kind of cool that it came back to me.
Appreciate
awesome,
it, man.
Thank you. Well, we're happy to have you, and we want to start with your early footwear history, the story of wearing the 1985 Jordan 1s, your cousins. You borrowed your cousins, and I think you wore them to prom. Was that one of the first early sneaker memories for you?
Yeah, I mean, before wearing the 85 Jordan 1s to it wasn't prom, it was freshman year of high school.
Okay.
Before that, I mean, I don't tell the story that much, but like, I think it was middle school, and my mom would take me to like a Ross, and we grabbed a pair of Dada Supremes, and I sharpied it with orange so I could have my own color. But, you know, after that, that's when I really got into sneakers, was when I wore my cousin's original 85 Jordan 1s to high school. And like, I mean, you guys kind of know what that feeling is when you tell it to random people, they don't understand. And that's why it's just crazy that, you know, just because of wearing these, the originals, like I actually wore the originals to high school. So all of the older, my brother was a jock. He had a bunch of old, you know, friends. So everyone just kind of gave me love without having to say anything other than what I had on my feet. And it was just crazy the power that those shoes had. When I put them on, I didn't truly know what it meant until, like, you know, you get that, the love from everyone else.
What kind of condition were they in?
They were in pretty damn good condition. They were yellowing, you know, but other than that, they were pretty good condition. I mean, I had to squeeze my feet into them because they were like a size 8 and I'm a 9.
it's kind of scary with those 85 younger, Jordan 1s squeezing into them because they have the crunchy collar, right? If they're too vintage.
Well, that one, it wasn't crunchy yet. Eight years later, they were crunchy. And then my cousin gave them back to me and said, hey, can you try to sell these for me, or can you fix these? And I was, you know, I'm building the business. So there's me trying to fix a collar on an 85 Jordan 1 just isn't worth my time. And I ended up having a friend hold on to them to help me sell them. And he lost them.
No.
Lost them.
Air quotes. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then he gave me like $300. And I was just like, what? How does the sneaker seller guy lose a pair of 1985 Jordan 1s?
And it's crazy too, because everyone now would recognize if someone was wearing 1985 Jordan 1s. But I feel like if I look back in my head, like if I had 1985 Jordan 1s, because I think we graduated high school in the same year, 2004, right? But if I had worn those in high school, I mean, me personally wouldn't have recognized what a 1985 Jordan 1 was, you know, during that period.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people just thought it was a lot of people was just like, oh, this is a Jordan 1, the Chicago Jordan 1, but like, the original is just a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, the other thing too, I feel like you're just talking about some people wouldn't necessarily know, but the people who do know, it kind of speaks to how exclusive those things were back then, or the whole sneaker scene wasn't a given for somebody in high school.
Right. There was only a select group of us that were into it, and it's like, I mean, it's just crazy where it's at today and where people are now wearing mids to be, you know, mids are selling out, and it's just like, it's insane. And that's also kind of why I started doing what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's something magical about, you know, having an authentic pair of Jordan 1s and like getting that one. But now it's just such a game and a business that it's like, that's why I started creating my own shoes in high school. It was because I wanted that special feeling that I could create myself. And now since then, I'm teaching people, all people, not just, you know, I think I tend to say kids, but the people that take the classes are just people that want to create. And there's something magical about creating something. And it's, and the way I teach is I give a nod to Nike and Jordan. I remember being 18, 19 years old and like being one of those, you know, an artist that like hated everything, like hate Nike, hate everything. I was wearing Vans, which Vans was a corporation too. So it's like, didn't matter. And then to come back to realize, just be like, you know, the older I got, was like, yo, I'm without Nike and Jordan and like putting those shoes on, I wouldn't have found my love and my craft. And I would have went down a very negative, dark path. Like without what the magic from what shoes were already becoming because of Michael Jordan and how his legacy made Nike what it was as well. Like I wouldn't have found my art, and now I'm able to give it back. And it's like, it comes full circle. And you know, anything I do is out of respect to the brand and to what they've done for me.
And you bring up Nike, and one of the first custom shoes you made was in high school. It was an Air Force One mid that you turned camouflage. How did that come about, and how was it? How good was it? Was that when you were like, I'm impressed with my own talent? It was for a friend, right?
No, so that one was actually for me. So that was the first, that was the first pair of shoes that I customized technically. I mean, that really got into it. So, I mean, I was wearing, the thing about me was I wasn't just like all Jordans or all Nike. I had shell toes. I had K-Swiss. Like I had Timberlands. I had everything. Like that was a way for me to separate how I looked from everyone else. I mean, a lot of my friends only had Jordans and Nikes. But I had everything. Like one day I looked like Justin Timberlake wearing one of those like hat bibs. And the next day I was wearing like a tall jersey. Like it didn't matter. Like I was just able to change the way I dressed because of the way I felt, which caused a lot of problems, caused a lot of fights. A lot of people said things to me that didn't make me feel good. So ended up in the fights and stuff. But,
The fights weren't over the sneakers specifically, but just because you were in this high school mode where you had to be in one box.
People called me gay. People called me, like, I kept my shoes so clean that people were just like, didn't understand like who I was and what I was doing. Like one time some guy called me gay and I slapped him in the face, like a hard hit. Mm-hmm. You know, this was just a way for me to express myself. I didn't know. I'm 15, 16, 17 at that time. So I didn't truly know what my feelings were and why I was doing what I was doing. I just did it because that's what felt right. So no, it wasn't about the shoes, but like, you know, a lot of the times these people would want to fight and I'd be like, nah, man, these shoes are worth more than your whole outfit. I don't want to ruin these shoes.
Yeah, I can't afford to fuck these up right now.
right.
But no, the first pair of shoes that I painted, I had an airbrush, like a cheap airbrush from Michael's Arts and Crafts. I had model paint, which model paint is for metal or plastic. Mm-hmm. And I just airbrushed in my room on a desk these all white mids into just a camouflage. It's like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And I wish I could recreate those. I mean, I wore them to school and everyone flipped out. Mm-hmm. And, the paint fell off right away because it's not meant for that. So then as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, this is cool. I can get that feeling. But it switched from like just wanting to make art to like, oh no, I need to figure out how to make this last forever. Which was an ongoing search. And I mean, even to this day, it's just like this endless game. Like even the shoes to this day aren't good enough for me. Like nothing's like this strive for perfection. What I've recently learned is like, it's okay that, you know, being perfect isn't perfect all the time, especially when you do something by hand. Even in a factory, like I can pick up a Nike that's in a Foot Locker and I can see something that went wrong. Mm-hmm. Things go wrong, and that's what people need to realize. I mean, even I recently had a tattoo from a tattoo artist, and he's just like, there's no such, you can't have a perfect line on a skin. It's just not possible. We can strive for that, and you can, you know, over time, it's going to just look different. So it's a lot of, So anyways, I went from, you know, model paint to, oh shit, how do I find better paint? And there was like this older customizer guy in our city. He was like the guy and he went by the Ghost. It's kind of cool. That is elusive, like Ghost. So I was like, oh, I got to meet this guy Ghost through a DJ. And then I met him and I was just like, yo, I want to I want better paint. And so then we drove to Berkeley to this store called Turtle Feathers and we grabbed some leather paint. And that's when I started painting Air Force Ones with Angelus paint by hand. And we did that through high school. I just didn't love that because like I could see my paint strokes. Mm-hmm. I just didn't love painting. So my grandmother bought me a home sewing machine and I started sewing. I'd cut shirts open and sew inlays, and then I would sew swooshes and glue them on top of an Air Force One. And that was like the beginning of me trying to figure out how to cut and sew.
After that, you end up moving to North Carolina, and I believe you said you got a job at a No Fear store, which I think is like an epic part of your your journey, but you had said that you like displayed the sneakers that you were making at the time, like in the store. And that's kind of when you first started to get noticed, like trying to sell them to customers who were shopping at the store.
Yeah. So, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, which is it's the South. So it's so much different than Northern California. You know, I come from the Bay Area, and there was a lot going on in San Francisco, but when I went out to Charlotte, it was just a different beast. I first got a job at Harris Teeter. Harris Teeter is like a grocery store, like a Safeway or Whole Foods. And, you know, I was making better money there, but then I was going up the escalator. I was a mall rat. Like I used to work at the mall back in high school. And then like the mall was the place to go. That's where the culture was coming from at the
time. Where were you eating?
What was I eating?
I feel like that's an important part of mall culture is the food court. Orange Julius?
You know? Yeah, no, so I would get an Orange Julius here and there. I like hot dog on a stick every once in a while, but it was always like the Asian places in the mall that you could get like chow mein and like you put
Star Express, right?
Star Cook Japan was amazing. Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Those are the places I was eating. I mean, here and there I'd get something else, but that was definitely it.
So going up the escalator.
Coming from Northern California, everyone in my hometown had NorCal tattoos. I was born in Orange County, so I thought I was from Southern California. So I ended up getting a SoCal tattoo on my forearm. And I was going up this escalator and I had like my arm out. I mean, I covered the tattoo since, but I had it out and it just said it was showing SoCal, and the manager saw this SoCal tattoo and he like came up and ran up. He's like, "Yo, that's a cool tattoo." He's like, "Yo, come check out the store." So I went into this No Fear store, which they were selling SoCal t-shirts at the time. And I went in, I was just like, "Oh, cool." He's like, "Yo, what if you came and worked here?" I was like, "That'd be sick." So then I ended up getting an assistant manager job, and then I started bringing my shoes inside there, and that was tough because they monitored their cameras so much. Like the owners would be able to watch they would watch you. If you don't pick up three pieces of items to try to sell, like you would get written up. And so I had shoes at the front that I painted for clients out in North Carolina, just kind of displaying, just showing people when they came in. It was a funny time. At that time I had like long surfer hair, but I also wore tall tees. I had a grill. I had like a cubic zirconian bracelet. I had big cubic zirconian earrings. One time this girl came into the store and she just came in and she was just like, "You know what? You remind me of something." I said, "What?" And this is when that song came out. She's like, "You remind me of that song, Icy."
Gucci Mane and Jeezy.
Gucci Mane. And then it was all over the radio at the time. Yeah. And I was just, I didn't know what to think. I was just like, okay.
Did you ever get in trouble for displaying your sneakers there? Because you were saying that people could watch you on the cameras. Did management ever get upset that you kind of were helping out your own business while being at work there?
I don't think I got caught. Like, I think I was friends with the manager enough that I would just do what I did. And, you know, I knew what I was doing. It wasn't like me trying to sell shit. It was me just trying to get my art out there. Right. That was Instagram before Instagram.
Right. You know?
I want to fast forward a little bit to the New York City trip and the Pharrell. Was it a meeting? Was it what? Give some more context to it, because it kind of, I saw an interview with you and you kind of talk about it, but you don't go into detail. But give us as much detail as you can on that New York City trip.
Yeah. So living in California, if you want to go to Southern California, you're driving 6 hours to get to California. When you live on the East Coast or over on that side, which you guys probably know better than me, it's just like you can go to another state. Like that's a different world. So we're in Charlotte. We're like, "Oh, let's just go to New York City. It's, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours, whatever." We drove up there and we went to the Bape store. We're like, "Oh, we want to check out Bape. We want to check out," I can't even remember some of the stores, but it was Bape. So we go to Bape and there's a line, and then like we get there. I think it was the first, we go straight to Bape from, you know, that long ass drive. We get there. Pharrell Williams is outside with his big ass security. And Pharrell Williams was just the guy that like inspired me in high school. He inspired me because he wasn't, you know, he didn't just play sports. He was into music, but also fashion and more rock. And it was just like more underground kind of style. So when I ran into him and you can't even explain the energy that comes from New York City. Like, you know, LA is just a whole different energy. New York City, just unexplainable. So the energy was already crazy. Running into Pharrell just randomly at the Bape store, I'm like, oh, I wanted to buy some Bapes. And of course, Bapes, you couldn't even buy Bapes. They were selling out at the time. And then I'm in the store. I'm trying to buy the sweater. Hype Williams bought the sweater that I needed, that I wanted. And this is just like, what the fuck? I'm just a kid from a small town. And like, yeah, I have big, big dreams. But it's like, I can't believe this is real kind of thing. So I took a photo with Pharrell. My brother was stoned at the time. And my brother was the one that actually, he was my older brother. He was the one that actually showed me Lap Dance and like NERD. And my brother was stoned and like he was stumbling and like ran into Pharrell. And
the bodyguard suplexed him or what?
Yeah, almost. He said, I don't even know who that guy is. And I said, man, that's Pharrell Williams. Remember the Lap Dance? You showed me all his music. And he's like, oh, shit. And you know, my brother's a stoner. We had to... I can't. What's that fast food spot over there that everyone eats out there? The small burgers. I can't even think of the name.
White Castle.
So we ended up going to White Castle. Anyways, it was the whole thing. But we ran. Yeah, we just. It was just like this crazy magical experience. And across from the Bape store, there was a Louis Vuitton event going on that Pharrell was at, and I was just like, "What is going on?" And I'm in New York City where people would come up and talk to me because I dressed a certain way or I looked a certain way. They're like, "Yo, what's up?" And, you know, in California, it's not like that. You don't get people just like, you know, what up? Like, you know, how you doing? It was just a different thing. And it was just such a magical experience that's when like everything like came to fruition. Like we had a small hotel in Times Square. And that's when I just kept writing down names. Like I need to come up with a business name or I need to come up with an alter ego. And that's, you know, I was like, well, okay, well, what do you do with shoes? It was like, shoot, like, what do you do? You're a doctor. Like, what are you doing? You're fixing these things up. And it came into surgeon. And originally it was shoe surgeons because it was me and my friend who was a DJ at the time. And, it kind of just stuck. It was shoe surgeons, the money sign in a Z. And it's just all of that whole experience was like just something so magical that like the energy was just unexplainable that helped me find my voice or my name at the time. I mean, and then it took, you know, 15 more years to like get to where I'm at. But at the same time, that there was a starting point that me running into Pharrell that, you know, you're seeing things on the internet, you're seeing things on TV. There's the, like, I could meet anyone in the world, but meeting him was just something aspirational of just like, that was the one person, you know?
And it was by chance. You just happened to be in New York. It's not like, oh, Pharrell, there's a Bape event and Pharrell's going to be at it. It was like you pulled up downtown and Pharrell happens to be at the Bape store. Wow. Interesting.
Have you met him since and like talked to him about it?
I ran into him at like an agenda show, just in passing. And then, eventually they hit me up to make a pair of boots. Couple times, you know, but I haven't really been able to connect with him, I think, on that level.
So I want to know, you said that event kind of gave you the inspiration or gave you the ideas for what this thing could become. You had the name sketched out. From there, what did you do in terms of next steps and turning it into your business?
So once I had the name, when I was back in North Carolina, I went to a streetwear store. It was called Niche Market, and it was across the street from Black Sheep Skate Shop. So it was like this little cool little culture, and he had like Stussy, and like you can't find Stussy in the mall. Like, so this is like, you know, finding the dope shit outside of the mall now, right? It was from like Von Dutch to what else was going on there? Ed Hardy pants. I don't know. It was it was a mess. But then I found like these little streetwear stores. So then I went into the store and I said, "Hey, I want to customize some shoes for you. Like, can you give me a pair of shoes?" You know, built a little relationship with him, and he's just like, sure, whatever. Like, you know, I think he was thinking that I was going to come back with Air Force Ones with rhinestones and like, you know, different checks. And he gave me a size 7 Vans Chukka, all white, mm-hmm. because he knew he wasn't going to sell it. And so I took it, went to a leather store, found out about lasering and lasered like shoe surgeons on it, and took it to a shoe repair shop, and they sewed the Vans logo on the side of it. I was able to pick it up in 3 days after it was done. And it was just like mind blown that I can have an idea and then it could be made. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to do this myself. I saw that they were able to sew on top of a shoe, and I could figure that out too. So I got in trouble in Charlotte and ended moving back to Northern California. And that's when I started looking up shoe repair shops. So the first part was like, to look at it as a business was like schooling and learning. I had mm-hmm. to figure out how I could figure out how to sew on top of a shoe, because I was tired of painting. There's already people painting
a lot shoes. Of it, right?
Yeah. And like, it was in Nike Talk. It was in Sneaker Freaker books. It was all over. And it was like, no, like I need more. Like I was looking for something that wasn't being done. I still loved it. I loved for what it was, and it was still to this day what it is. Like it's a huge craft and it's a huge art. And now we have a full time painter on our crew in the studio, because you need it. But I moved back to Northern California and I started looking at shoe repair shops. The first shoe repair shop I went to, the guy just cursed me away. He said, fuck you, get out of here. You're going to steal my business. And I mean, he's probably like 50 or 60 at the time. I'm 18. Mm-hmm. And I was just mind blown that someone can just curse you away for wanting to learn something. But the same day I went down to another shoe repair shop and I asked him, I was just like, hey, I mean, have you guys been to a shoe repair shop before? Any of you guys?
I actually have just really quick. I was trying to do a journalism project on shoe repair shops in college. And I had the exact same experience where I was like, hey man, I just want to talk to you and like interview you for like 10 minutes, you know? And like you said, it was like a guy who was like in his 60s or whatever. And he was like, I don't have time for you. Get out of my store. You know? So it's like, it was the exact same
cobbler mentality.
Yeah. It's not glamorous, man. You're smelling glue all day. You're with chemicals. You're charging dollars, if not, you know, a few bucks just to fix a pair of shoes, where people are trying to haggle you on fixing their shoes. So it's like, it's not a fun industry, or it wasn't at that time. I mean, it's still not that fun. Like the second guy I went to, he's in Santa Rosa and he's still smoking cigarettes inside the space with glue and everything. And I'm just like, what is going on? There's definitely going to be a resurgence. And this is kind of what I pitched Nike. And I really think this is what Nike should be looking for, is how to repair their product, just because it's already being repaired by restoration artists and customizers. Mm-hmm. If Nike and the most sustainable thing in the world is not making more product, but that's also not going to happen. So the next most sustainable thing is repairing, right?
Right.
So it's like Patagonia, you send back your stuff, they'll repair it. Mm-hmm. If Nike did that, that would be just a world game changer, because people are already doing it. You know, imagine like a shoe repair shop that's more new age, where Nike's, you know, it's, you know, Nike, you can get, you know, you have your old 1985 Jordan 1s.
Yeah. And they're crusty, like, and they're crumbling around the collar.
Yeah, you can bring it to this spot that's certified Nike or whatever. And it's like, you can get it fixed by a certified person. I do think that's going to be the future. I've already built out a couple concepts for it. It's just also not... It takes a lot of labor, so that's why you have to build a school to figure out how to get the people that want to do the work.
Yeah. Dom, I want to know too, while you were building up the business, how many sneakers were you buying on a personal level, or like what were your interests in terms of sneakers? Because I know, just going back to high school real quick, you were super into Jordans back then, not just the 85 pair, but you had people backdooring sneakers for you out in Vallejo, right? You were getting sneakers kind of as early as you could just to flex. So how into sneakers personally were you in these different eras?
I mean, I didn't have that much money to spend on it. So I would have like one pair of, I had a few pairs of Jordans. Like I had all of the patent leather ones that came out in 03, 04, or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But then I didn't, anything I bought was like for me to wear. I didn't ever sell anything. And then that's when I got into Vans. I started like working at Vans. So I was able to get a bunch of Vans for next to nothing to just practice on. Mm-hmm. So it just really became, I mean, I loved shoes and what they were for. I just didn't, all my money went from like spending money on shoes of like how I could wear and be cool to like, okay, how can I learn how to do this? How can I learn my art onto these shoes? So I was, you know, buying Vans and other things, and I'd still, you know, maybe buy some Air Force Ones, but I think I stopped buying Jordans just because it started becoming so hard. And my focus really just went from, okay, why, you know, I wore this pair of shoes, it made me feel this type of way. Mm-hmm. Now, how can I recreate it? So I knew I could recreate it from just like feeling it. And then it kind of went away of like me wanting to wear my stuff. Even to this day, it's like, I could care less about wearing my shoes. It's, I love making product. And now where I'm at even today, it's like, I love teaching people how to get that feeling.
That's more rewarding for you than actually wearing a shoe you designed or having a limited shoe somebody else designed.
Yeah. It's an interesting place where I'm at, where it's like, originally it was because of this special shoe, because of this moment. And now it's like, I just want to help give people the empower them to build something for themselves. When it's not even just about the shoes, when you come take these classes, it's like you come and like learn the process of shoemaking, which it technically is a crash course that actually works. Like a lot of these students are making crazy shoes now, whether it's for themselves or a business. And that's like my biggest accomplishment. It's like, I was able to at least unlock that, because it took me 10 plus years to like put all of these pieces together. No one was just like, here's the, this is how you do it. So now that I'm able to give people the introductory of like what you can do, how you can do it, and then see where you take it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the biggest blessing. And the biggest thing from these classes is like, I get to be myself. I'm not, trying to be someone I'm not. I'm telling them about my struggles and all of these tough things that I've gone through. And even to this day of what I'm going through, how to be good to yourself, how to be a better human for not only yourself, but for everyone around you. And like these classes are very magical in the sense that like I get to connect with strangers from all over the world with different backgrounds, different purposes, different reasons why they came to take this class. Some of them want to learn how to make sneakers. Some of them love sneakers. Some of them don't even care about sneakers. They just want to make something. And you get them all in the room, and then it's such a cool experience.
Yeah.
I want to go to 2011 when you start working with Justin Bieber. And there was even like the label of like Justin Bieber's personal sneaker customizer. Talk about how that came about. I think it was like through Android Home.
Yeah.
And what was it like working with Bieber and kind of the reaction that you got that when people were discovering that you were working on shoes for him?
Man, 2011. This is crazy because this all comes full circle again. But it's like, so I built a relationship through, first I found out about Black Scale. You guys all know Black Scale, right?
Yep, Mega, of course.
And he's from San Francisco. So I went into a store. Then I saw this Black Scale collab with Android Home. I see this shoe and I'm just like, $300. It wasn't Louis Vuitton and it wasn't, you know, Vans, right? So it was this in between of fashion that you can be more original, where you don't have what everyone else had. So that was my introduction to Android Home. So then I found Javier Laval, founder and designer of Android Home, on Facebook. Befriended him on Facebook because I'll go reach out to anyone. Like, I don't, if someone wants to say fuck you, as you've seen, I don't care. Like, say fuck me multiple times. It's not going to stop me from just like wanting to learn. So I reached out to him. Then we built some kind of digital friendship on Facebook. He saw that I was customizing shoes here and there. And then he reached out to me a few months later. He wanted shoes for Will.i.am for the VMAs. So I made a pair of shoes for the BMAs. At the same time, I was getting hit up by Law & Order SVU. I was making shoes for Law & Order SVU. And I was also making shoes for H. Lorenzo in West Hollywood, one of the most high-end, you know, stores out there. So I was doing all of this at the same time, all from different sources from me just doing what I was doing. So I drove down to deliver these shoes for the Will I Am. And that's when I was with Javier, and I ran it, and they were in a meeting. He was in a meeting with Justin Bieber's stylist. And that's when I got connected with Justin Bieber's stylist. And then they hit me up a few months later. And then I started making shoes for Justin Bieber. And, you know, I'm, well, how, 2011. So what am I, 23, 24? And, you know, I'm pretty, you know, you think you're the shit at that age, or at least I did. I thought I was like this cool fucking guy. You know, the ego was really like, which I think part of that ego is what you need at that, at a certain part in your life, mm-hmm, to like, mm-hmm, think that you're this crazy, yeah, thing to help develop it. But yeah, I mean, I was, yeah, well, what happened was, so I started making shoes for Justin Bieber, and then they hit me up to do like 10 pairs in a, like, they're like, oh, we need 10 pairs by Sunday. And I was young. I was like, yeah, for sure, I can do that. Ended up going crazy, ended up in a mental hospital, ended up waking up in the hospital to then seeing the upscale hype pick up Justin Bieber in my shoes. So then it became more in the blogs. And I was just like, I woke up to it in the blogs, because first I was just making him shoes for the tours, and that was cool. But then like when the blogs actually, when it was like notarized of like, yo, this is what he's doing, it's like more press, yeah, on it. It made, yeah, me feel special. Like, oh shit, I am doing that. You know, like people can hit me up like, oh, make shoes for, you know, Pharrell. But it's like, if it's not out in the press and people don't see it, like it was hard for me to believe. But then, yeah, so then I was making shoes for Justin Bieber and a couple other, you know, people. And I wasn't too hyped on it. I mean, I loved it. And still to this day, I haven't met Justin Bieber, which I will eventually.
Wait, you were making all these shoes for him and you never met him?
He was like 15. He was on tour. He was getting pushed to his limits. And I was like trying to, you know, I was like the first. I mean, there was like places in Hollywood where you can go and bring shoes to customize. But like, I was like the first name behind things, right?
So you're probably getting all these calls at the same time. You have other clientele who's building and building, more famous people who want, like you said, 10 pairs of shoes by Sunday.
Yeah, so it was cool. But so then I became known as like the Justin Bieber's custom, you know, artist. And it was like, that's not what I wanted to be known as. Like, you know, I respected who he was and what he was building, but that's not who I didn't want to be known as, that person. You know, people are like, oh, you're the guy that made shoes for Justin Bieber. And it's like, that's not what I want people to know me as, even to this day. Like, I don't even, now that I'm building the brand, I don't want to even be just known as the shoe surgeon. Like, I don't want to be like, I love building the brand, but at the same time, I just want to be known for who I am. And shoes don't define me. They help create a voice to get me where I'm at today. But my vision and my life goals are much bigger than just shoes. I think I'm grateful for everything that allowed me to get to this place, but it's like, it's bigger than that. And part of me like thinks about that, like seems like I'm constantly like trying to create something and then run away from it.
You end up doing shoes for Drake. I know we spoke about it on Full Size Run. You did the Stone Island Air Jordan 12s, but you also did like the Cactus Plant flea market looking Air Force Ones. That you also made a pair for Joe LaPuma.
Yes.
But could you talk about how you ended up doing the Drake sneakers?
The first ones or which ones?
The Jordans with the Stone Island badge on the back.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the stuff is just like comes as an idea, right? They're like, okay, so a few ways different ways happen. Like, eventually Pharrell reached out to me to do a pair of boots, right? Which was a dream. Like,
right.
And then for this Drake thing was like, I just remember being in my garage, always like trying to practice it. Even I was making shoes for Justin Bieber, listening to Drake's music and Rick Ross and all of this music. I was like, eventually I'm going to make shoes for them. Like, so for the Drake one, it was just like, It was from like a, I knew he was into Stone Island. I mean, everyone knew he was into Stone Island. I knew, he had the OVO 12s. So I like just, I'd piece that idea together and I ended up putting it out there. And then he hit me up directly and he's like, these are cool, but I like black. So the first ones were blue. The first ones were blue, like super colorful, and it's like definitely not his style. But they look so beautiful. So then he came back and he's like, "Oh, these are cool, but I like black." Which actually, I gotta find those blue ones. Oh, I think he has them. But so then I ended up making the black ones, and that was just the meeting Drake. That story, like I wish I could recreate a skit for that one. That shit was.
What happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're at the, I'm in LA, they're always in LA, and they're at the Peppermint Club. They're at the show, they're at the Dave Chappelle and John Mayer show. So they hit me up. They're like, okay, we're in LA, come to the Peppermint Club, come bring the shoes. I'm like, okay. So a couple hours later, I'm driving to the Peppermint Club. I think my kids were asleep with my partners, and I was just like, yo, I got to go to the Peppermint Club. She's like, okay. And so I pull up to the club. It's quiet. No one's outside. I pull up, and there's like security at the front. They're like, who are you here for? And I'm like, oh, I'm delivering shoes.
Right.
I'm like, I'm delivering shoes for Drake.
For the boy.
Like, yeah. And he's like, okay. One of the guys at the door was like, oh, he kind of knew about the shoe surgeon. And they're like, they asked around. They're like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, so bummed, like, fuck. Drake's security comes out the back and he's like, yo. He's like, yo, I know who you are. Yada, yada, yada. And he loved the sneakers already. So it was cool. So they're like, yo, come in. And so I go into the back door at Peppermint Club. And with a box of shoes, and I go in there, and I'm just like, I can't believe this is real kind of shit. Yeah. Still, I'm just like, what's going on? So Dave Chappelle's on there, and it's like, I didn't realize Dave Chappelle, like in those shows, they make everyone cover their phones or put them away.
Yeah,
and I had my phone still because I went in the back door. So I had my phone out and stuff, and everyone's like looking at me like, well, how's this fool have his phone? And I didn't realize like I wasn't supposed to have my phone. Like security's looking at me, and I'm just like, I feel like I'm not supposed to have my phone, so I put it back. But anyway, so, Drake has a table in the back, and I was like, what up? And I was just so kind of, there's a couple of times when I met celebrities where I was just like, kind of like taken back. Like the other person that I met was DJ Khaled, just because he was such a personality that I didn't know how to even communicate. Anyways, so I see Drake. So I'm at the table. He's like, yo, you want a drink? And I was like, so just kind of scared. I was like, I don't drink. And then ended up just watching the show. Drake went on the stage with him because they put him into the show. And, I ran Salehi was there. And it was just like such a crazy experience to like, deliver shoes at a Chappelle show to Drake, meeting Drake for the first time, meeting a bunch of the crew. And then, it feels like a dream.
Like you said, though, your work is about a lot more than celebrity clientele, and you have the school, but also you're making these shoes that kind of catch on in a bigger way. And I think one of the ones was the Python Jordans, because when you made that first pair of Python Jordans, it turned into this whole trend within custom sneakers where there was this whole wave about it. How did that happen, and how big was that at the time?
This is what's crazy. It's full circle from Complex, right? So like Joy Claire, who worked at Super at the time, who I got into contact from Bieber because Bieber was getting Supras. Me and her became, friends. And then she got hottest female in sneakers. Mm-hmm. So I hit her up. I was like, yo, I really want to make you some shoes. And I was like, what's your favorite pair of shoes? She said the Bred Jordan 4s. So I was like, okay. So I got the Bred Jordan 4s. They're all black. And I just happened to have Python City. Like I was someone that just loved materials. And I would have leather everywhere. I had Pendleton fabrics. I just had different fabrics around. I never just had an idea. And like, I didn't see the material. Like the way I built ideas was just like things were in front of me and like it all just had to line up and I would build it to life. So She Loved the Bread 4. It was, I think it re-released around that same time as well, 2016 or 14. I'm not sure.
I think 14, I want to say off the top of my head, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it was 14. So then I just put Black Python on her Jordan 4s, and that's when like Instagram was starting. I posted a photo on Instagram. I think other blogs saw it, other customizers saw it, other people saw it, and then had other customizers make it and make it better. Like then it was like a race of like, how do you make better quality shoes? And then, that became a thing, because before that, no one was allowed to touch Jordans. Like mm-hmm. You can customize Air Force Ones all day, but like the Jordans, like don't touch those. You know what I mean? And it was like, I put that out there, love, hate, whatever, you know, whatever it may be. It definitely sparked something to have other people do it and to, you know, to create it in more of an industry.
It's funny, Dom, because we actually had a moment with our crew the other day where I think Jay Balvin had worn your like canary off-white Jordan 1s, and we couldn't tell in the picture, and we thought they were actually he had gotten the canary off-white Jordan 1s before Virgil did, like, but then we realized that you had done those up beforehand. It was just kind of a funny moment.
I mean, life is crazy, and for me to be able to create my art, whether it's, you know, a custom Nike, and, you know, people say what they will about it, it's at least allowing, I know that I'm doing the right thing where I'm helping people. Creating and building with your hands is such a good therapy for people. Eventually, I want to get my schools into LeBron's school. I want to be able to give it to the kids, just because I know at a young age, if I was actually able to have all this pent up energy inside me and actually build an idea to life, mm-hmm. like a lot of people don't ever get to experience having an idea and seeing it in real,
making it a physical thing.
That's like, that's an unexplainable thing. So I know that I'm doing something right. And I think the industry is going through a lot right now with fakes and customs, and it's a crazy world. It's like, so you got to stay, you know, I'm working on staying true to myself, and also, you know, why I started was to help me through a tough time in my life. Now I'm able to help other people as well.
I feel like we have to talk about what the industry is going through right now. Can we talk about Lil Nas X and the Mischief custom Satan shoes? Nike is suing Mischief mm-hmm. over these shoes, which are essentially customs. And I have the feeling that everybody who makes custom sneakers for a living, like you, is watching this case, because there's not a lot of precedent for Nike, or maybe there is, that you've seen, but taking legal action against people making custom shoes. How do you feel about it?
How do I feel about it? I see Nike's standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Nike is a brand that was built from a garage, just right. like, you know,
just a like lot your of operation.
Yeah, people don't see that. People don't see where they started. They just see where they're at, and like, oh, they're a $1 billion company, yada yada yada. And it's like, yeah, you have to start somewhere. You don't just like that doesn't just happen, right? So I see they need to protect themselves. Which also gives me like this, you know, this feeling of I'm in a gray area, right? What I do is I feel like I'm doing everything in the way of that would hold the integrity to the brand. That right. everything that I don't know if any of you guys none of you guys have been in my office, but I've had Nike guys come in the office. I've had all Jordan brand mm-hmm. and everything that we do everything in LA. And everything comes deconstructed from a Nike that I buy. Like if we do a pair of Travis mm-hmm. Scott's, I'm buying Travis Scott's at resale prices. Some of the Travis Scott's I'm paying between $1,000 and $2,000 just for the sole. I've been asked multiple times, like, make your shoes in China, you know, get fake soles from China. And it's like, that's where I put my foot in the ground, and it's like, that's where I'll stop. Like, I don't need to you know, it's, you know, I don't need to make the most amount of money. Like, I could be making a lot more money, but that's, this isn't about the money, and like the right. custom Nike stuff is really something bigger to me than, you know, just making a shit ton of money. There's just something more to it, which, you know, is going to come to developing my own original line, which I've been working on for 10 plus years. It's just, this business has grown so much that I can only handle so much at a time. But back to your question, I think it's, I mean, you saw what happened with Warren Loda, which is completely different. And then this one, I just can't fathom 666. I can't fathom devil worshiping. I do believe people have their own, their right to believe and do what they want, but at the expense of a company like that, where it did seem to be misconstrued when it first came out, mm-hmm. right? It first mm-hmm. was like, oh, Nike and Lil Nas X are selling these shoes.
Like people actually believed that.
686 shoes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys saw all of the backlash that first part got.
Yeah.
To then, like, I was getting DMs from old friends and people like, yo, did you see what Nike did? And I was like, no, there's no way. That's not Nike. And then it comes into a whole conspiracy where people are like, they still think Nike did it. And it's like, that's where Nike is protecting themselves in a sense where they can't be getting taken advantage of. And they need to tread lightly, especially in today's culture. It's even harder for any company or human to live and to like create a business. There's so much cancel culture for doing one wrong thing. And that one's a tough one. But when I see 666 and I just see, you know, I don't know, I haven't read in so far into the satanic worshiping and stuff, but I just can't see that selling a product like that.
Right. Right.
You know, and then I did a little bit more research and saw that Mischief company did a Jesus shoe. You know, I think it's just their way of marketing. That was a huge marketing stunt, which I get it. It's just, you know, I don't know, that size of a company like Nike, like they need to protect themselves as much as possible. And they like the bigger that I've gotten in my size of a company, it's like, I see big companies and like, that shit is not easy. Like, you know, there's multiple people making decisions and like they're trying to do what's best for the company and also what's relevant for the culture, because that's like, you know, kind of how they started. So I don't know. What do you think about it? What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I just think it's such a weird space for Nike to be in, because it's clear that Nike appreciates customizers to some extent. And you mentioned the Warren Lotus lawsuit, and we talked about this last week. But in that lawsuit, Nike references that custom sneakers are, quote, part of sneaker culture. So it's weird for Nike to all of a sudden be against one sneaker custom. But I understand why, because of the trademark issue and the confusion around whether or not this is a legitimate Nike product. So I understand it to an extent.
And Dom, I heard you say in the past that like you mentioned not wanting to do fake shoes, but you know, you've gone far as say you just hate fake sneakers when you were talking about like infant Yeezys and whatnot, and you just don't want to support like a product like that. So like you mentioned Warren Lotus, and like what is your thoughts on that in the custom world?
See, that's the difference between, because I mean, I get, when any of these things come up, I'm getting DM, I'm getting people messaging me, I'm getting people in the comments like, this is what the shoe surgeon does, this is what he does. And it's like, I don't do that. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not making my shoes overseas. I'm not, I mean, this, the Lil Nas X is a whole new one. I just don't, I think the fine line with that one is just like satanic worshiping. And like, for that, me, that's just too much for me. But I hold myself to a standard where everything that I do comes off of, an authentic Nike or Jordan or Adidas, whatever the brand may be that I take apart. Sometimes I'm paying you know, sometimes I mean, I'm spending a lot of money on StockX. I spend a lot of money resell on Souls. And I'm recreating a top. So, I mean, there's so much gray area in all of it. And at the, and I really feel like I'm buying the product authentically, and then I'm refurbishing the top, right?
So you're not taking away a sale from Nike. You're still getting the Nike product.
Yeah, and you know, this is a tough subject to talk about because there's a gray area in what I do and what all of this industry. But now you're seeing all these these knockoff Jordan 1 versions of
yes
Jordan, and you know, there's people like Bobby Hundreds that, you know, he's saying this is great. That's what I've read, that he likes it. This is like the Wild West because that's the culture. But at the same time, it's like I don't know. We're off. It's a tough situation, and I'm sure Nike, and it's such a big corporation, like they trying to figure out how to work with it all, right? So, you know, I mean, I've had talks with Jordan and Nike where I wanted to, you know, I wanted to do all the custom shops, and I wanted to do schools with them. I think it's tough for a company like that because they need to figure out, you know, at what point do they need to draw the line, and at what point, you know, can they still be part of the culture? It's not easy to be anyone at Nike.
Right.
It's not easy to be human, you know, at this time in life, for anyone. It's some people more so than others, but like, I also, I just, with what I've been able to build, like I'm looking at a big corporation like that, like, fuck, how do they do that when you have to maneuver legally? You have to maneuver. You also have to be a part of the culture because that's, you know, what it was about. And it's like, they also need to make money, right? And with that money, it's not just like they're making money. They're giving jobs. They are creating, something more than just the brand. And now, you know, there's resale, which is a jobs off of that, right? So that's another market that came from Nike in the beginning. So I don't know. I really need to dive into that a little bit more and like think about it. It's tough. And I see where it's tough for a company like that.
Definitely. It's like it's an overarching situation, but they're all distinctively different in their own way. One thing, I know we've talked a lot about celebrities and you making shoes for celebrities. I don't want to keep bringing it up, but we have to talk. Nelly's custom Dancing with the Stars shoes. So good. How did that come about? I know I keep saying, how did this come about? But this was really, when these went online, it was like, what is going on? And then figuring out that you did them.
Turn the Jordans into dance shoes.
Jordan 3.
Put a heel on it.
Yes, Jordan 3 and the Jordan 11. We have to know, how did those conversations start and how did that come about? So good.
Now, that one was a fun one because it was, you know, it's a love hate. And anything that I do is like a battle within myself too. Of like, should I do this? Should I not do it? Why am I doing this? What's the purpose for me? What's the purpose for them? Like, what is the goal here? Nelly hit me up a few years ago for one of the, I don't know, something that I released. I think it was the Beast Pack, I think. I think he hit me up. And a lot of these guys are, you know, messaging me, and which is just so cool to me. Like, I kind of geek out about it. Like, I remember listening to their songs, and like, you know, so now I think it's the same for them. But so he hit me up years ago, and then like he hit me up, he DM'd me, and I guess after the first show, if anyone saw it, like they would talk, they were like, "Yo, you need dance shoes," because he was wearing 11s or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, anyways, I get a DM, and then he texts me and calls me, and I'm in a class, I'm teaching a class, so I'm getting on. He's like, I get a text from him from a new number, and he's just like, "Yo, man, I need you to help me out here." And then I look at the DM, and then I'm like, well, he's on Dancing with the Stars, and I'm like, I don't even like, that's not really, I'm like, what? Dancing with the Stars? Like, is that even
so awesome? Is that even talking about it's Nelly? It's so good, though. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's great. And then I'm just kind of talking to you how my thoughts are happening at how they're going. It's just like Nelly, like what? Dancing with the Stars. And then I'm just like, get all. And then I slow down. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. And then he's and like, I'm like, yo, like I need to get on a call with you just to hear what you're looking for. Because for me, as a artist or shoemaker or shoe repairman, my goal is to solve a problem, right? So he had a problem. He wants sneakers, but he wants to be able to dance in them. So there's an easy way to do it where you grab a pair of sneakers and you just throw dancing suede chrome on the bottom of it and you can dance. But it's like, no, there's more to it for me. It's like, I don't want to just do a quick fix. So I called him. He's like, yeah. He's like, I just want cool sneakers and this and that, but I want to be able to dance in it. And then I was like, okay, well, how do you like dancing? What kind of dances are you doing? And then I'm calling around.
The fact
all
that you're having this conversation
this
with
amazing.
Nelly
is awesome.
Like, again, you in high school, wish, you know,
that sweet spot
then.
Of country yeah. grammar. I know. Yeah.
Here, not knowing 17 years later, you'd be having a conversation like, okay, you're on Dancing with the Stars. What type of shoes do you need? That's insane.
The best part too, is just like, well, when we start making any of these guys' shoes, we just bump their music really mm-hmm. loudly in the studio. So mm-hmm. everyone that's making the shoes or anyone is like feeling the music. So the first one, 11? No, the first one was the 3. Yeah. So he's in LA. They're filming in LA. I'm like, yo, can you get me a pair of shoes here fast? Because he needed them by Monday. And I think I talked to him either Friday or Saturday. And I like shit like that. I like shit that's just last minute. It like excites me. I mean, I've since learned to not like it so much because it also caused headache for everyone in the company, not just you. If, you know, if I'm not the only one doing it, I have to ask for help. I have to like pull other people, stop what you're doing, which is not effective for business. But I like, that's what excites me. And that's what keeps me going. So anyways, he sent me a pair of 3s and then I'm like, fuck, how do I do this? Like, do I do it this way? I called around every like dance shoe store in Los Angeles and I'm like, fuck, how am I going to do this? I'm going to build the shoe, the sole from scratch. What am I going to do? Like, you know, going to the shoe repair shops of just like thinking. And what was great was I made a pair of dance Jordan 1s for Odell Beckham like a year later a year earlier just for him to dance with at Baker Mayfield's wedding.
Oh,
so I was like, oh shit, I've already kind of done this. So I know like a little bit, but this is different. So then I go to a dance shoe, grab some dance shoes and rip it apart, you know, build it into the shoe. And he wore them and it worked. And they were definitely very ugly. And I'm okay with it because I know that I was just solving a problem. He wanted dope sneakers on top and he wanted to be able to dance with it. So it's like, that's why design and shoemaking is tough in general. You can't just like come up with an idea and it's going to be look good and work good. Like it takes years to like build it, go back to the drawing board, design it. And like, this is why Nike is it takes time to build greatness. You can't just like come up with an idea and like, it's perfect. Like even the stuff I built today, it's like there's, you need years of like wear testing. Sometimes you need, you know, you're using new materials, you're doing all this stuff. So being a speed producer isn't always, it's more, sometimes it's just more art. You can't ever, you know, expect something to be perfect. But yeah, that was just great because then he's like, all right, well, let's do the next one. And I was like, okay, well, let's try to get ahead of this so I can
give me some time. Give me some lead time.
I'm not fucking, you know, I was working seven days a week at that time just to do this for him. And you know, it built a bond between us and it was a fun project and it got the press. I mean, I got calls from the producers of the show just to be like, yo, this is great. So hopefully eventually I'm on the show myself just to keep it going.
Another full circle moment.
Dom, before we go, I just want to ask you, so obviously you've done shoes for Adidas, you've done Air Jordan 13s for Jordan Brand, you've done Pizza Hut sneakers, but when are we going to get an actual manufactured shoe surgeon sneaker collaboration?
Man, the long answer, the short answer. I mean, I have them on the table. It's just like me fighting myself of like, what is that? Because the shoe surgeon for me was never just like one brand. So it's like, I need to be able to collaborate with other brands because I'm a customization service. Now that Jerry's over at Adidas has been really good for me because me and I would consider us pretty, you know, fairly close in the sense that we've worked on small things together, and it's just a cool to see him to be at the, to help push them towards something. So then I've built a, I'm back closer with Adidas again, and you know, there could be something there. My daughter's freaking out right now. You know, there's something on the table with, for Vans. I don't have that answer. There's things been on the table. It's just like, for some reason, it's like either I'm scared of moving everything forward of where it could go, or I am not super hyped on what's on the table. But an actual manufactured collaboration, I mean, now if we're talking about it right now, I mean, it takes minimum a year to 2 years. So if I decide on what I have on the table, then 1 to 2 years. I think I'm going to drop my original shoe before it, just because I have more control over it.
And that shoe that you said, your original shoe, has been like 10 years in the making, huh?
It's, you know, once I went from like loving the Jordan brand shoes when I was younger to like Vans, and I was like, then seeing the Android Home Black Scale, I was like, oh, you can just do your own shoe. I became more into design. A lot of the stuff that people see are, you know, customized Jordans and Nikes, because that's what people want. But yeah, I've been working on original shoes for a long time. I've designed shoes secretly for people, for different big brands. I've also helped launch people's original shoe brands. You know, I mean, I got a good roster under there. So it's, now it's just the time to, I've built a good business, thankful to my team, that where now I'm able to focus on this side of the part that I'm able to. So yeah, I think soon.
Awesome. Well, we can't thank you enough. Love what you're doing with the school, and with the country opening up, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more opportunity to get that in person, and so much history. We could do a whole part two and part three, but we can't thank you enough for taking the time, and always excited to see your next project. It's always unexpected. Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Dom.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by Kyle Garvey. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.